Today we're listening back to a conversation we had earlier this year when Morgan State University students put together an investigative cover story for the Baltimore City paper looking at the youth curfew that was expanded in 2014. In light of the curfew that the city was under during the uprising, we're listening back to this conversation about the youth in the city who are under the curfew every night of the year. So we are joined here in studio. First, Karen Hooper is with us. Karen is an incredible award-winning journalist, author of Chasing Gideon, The Elusive Quest for Poor People's Justice, and a lecturer here at the School of Global Journalism and Communication, whose project this was with the students. Good to have you back in the studio, Karen.
Thanks for having me.
And we're joined by three of the students who wrote this piece. Asha Glover.
Hi.
Hi, Asha. Is Morgan State University student and editor-in-chief of The Spokesman, which is Morgan State's student newspaper. Good to have you in studio.
Good to be here, sorry.
Yeah, that's good to have you too. And Amira Harrison is with us, who is also a Morgan State student and one of the writers for the City Paper story on Baltimore's youth curfew. And Tasha Poteet?
No.
Tasha.
Tasha.
Sorry. Tasha and Amira?
Yep.
Who is also one of the reporters here and a student at Morgan State. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I said to you before they went on the air that I was really impressed and blown away by the writing. I mean, it was really super writing, and it was great investigative work that I think Karen, that you might be prejudiced because these are your students, but I think this work that was done in the city paper by the students at Morgan could go into any national newspaper in the country. It was that good.
Yeah, I was very proud of the work that they did on this project, and it was a group of seniors, about nine students who we did an experiment this time with their senior thesis, and so we had these nine students all focus on one topic, which was the new curfew in Baltimore, and sort of report that story from every angle. And one of the things I was most impressed about was, I think it was the second week of classes, I had the students brainstorm much as we would if we were an editorial board trying to come up with story ideas. And pretty much they hit on every single topic, every story. I think, my fellow editors at the Village Voice might have come up with in terms of how to approach this topic and some creative ways of looking at it.
And I think in some ways, I mean, I just when I was reading the stories, I was so impressed by how you got into the heart of the people that you were with and interviewing. How did that feel for you all?
It was hard at times, I think, because my story was A Night in the Pit. And we followed a group of guys around for a few hours after curfew. And, of course, we didn't know them. They didn't know us. We met them through a mutual friend. And it was kind of hard to get them to open up to us because, obviously, they didn't know who we were. They didn't know what we would do with the information. So it was kind of hard to get them to feel comfortable. But I think after a few hours of us kind of bonding and talking, they felt comfortable enough to, you know.
Did you feel comfortable? How did you feel being there?
I was little nervous because, first of all, it was after 12 at night. So, you know, being out that late is kind of, you know, scary. But I felt comfortable. You know, I thought they were nice. They were very open with their details. They showed us a lot of their hangout spots, and it was good.
So I'm going to come back to that because all these stories raised a lot of questions in my mind. We had a lot of debates in this program about the curfew being implemented. And so I was really interested in seeing what you all did. And so, Amira. Mm-hmm. Amira, Tasha,
yes.
Talk a bit about your stories for a moment.
So I actually had the Joey Savage piece in the Night in the Life, the curfew centers. I found Joey in a mall parking lot, and he did have his skateboard and everything like that. But he was very easy to talk to. Once we broke the ice, I told him, "Hey, I'm just gonna chill with you. You know, see what you do. No pressure. Don't do anything you don't normally do." And he was, you know, amazing. You know. Never changed his personality. Neither did his friends.
These are the kids who are doing the skateboard thing at Coppin State and other around
town,
right?
Yeah, they're the skater bunch, and they're proud of it. You know, that's what they do, curfew or no curfew. It really didn't matter to them, and they were not afraid to say it, especially Joey.
The one who broke his wrist.
He breaks a lot of things, he says. Yeah, so. I tell him, be careful, at nighttime, but they're kids. So,
and you also went inside the center.
I did went inside
both
the centers, right. One on the west side and one on the east side.
Right.
The east side was a lot different than the west side. I found it was more lively, energetic, and the West Side Center, there really wasn't much for me to talk to, but a youth connector there. So it was, kind of different to see how they're operating, because it wasn't what kind of was promoted at first. So right. Actually seeing it and reading was,
very different.
Very different.
One of the things, I'm going to come back to your story as well, because the both those stories, but because they both conjured up different things for me. But I think nobody has yet written a story about what it feels like to be in the centers. That was what's so amazing. I mean, you open up a door to these lives, these children, people working there that otherwise would not have been seen, that changes, I think, in many ways, at least for me, changes the nature of the conversation and what kind of conversation we should be having about that. I was very taken with those pieces. And now, to the editor herself, Asha.
So in this package, I worked more on the numbers. Even though I did go out and talk to some students, I really was working on the statistical data. So it was really interesting to see how my peers were talking to all these youth, and they were saying these one things about the curfew, and then I have the raw data in front of me, and it's like they don't even realize how big this is, because we found that most of the youth who were being taken or who were being taken to the curfew center were under the age or were 13. And they were mostly African-American males. Mm-hmm. The youngest person was 3 at the time that we started to do our research. So to think of
3?
Yeah, to think of a 3-year-old being picked up and taken someplace that by a police officer in the middle of the night, that's a really scary thought. Because, I mean, thinking about when I was 3, which I can barely remember, but being picked up like that, I'm sure that's a very horrifying experience. Because you don't know who you're going with. You don't know where you're going. It's all foreign to you. But seeing the numbers kind of like drew it into perspective for me, I think.
And one of the things I think was interesting, too, about the younger kids who were picked up is, or someone who's like, 3, 4, 5 years old, is actually the police don't need these curfew laws in order to pick these kids up. I mean, that's kind of, in those cases, it's a pretty clear safety issue for a little kid that age to be out on the streets by themselves. So what was interesting was, given that if that was a safety concern for any cop, they could always pick that kid up and try to take it home or call children's services or something like that. What I think was interesting and was kind of a driving set question in the research was, do we really need this curfew? What purpose does it serve the city of Baltimore and the youth? And does it have the potential to escalate tension between black youth in Baltimore and the police? So those were some of the questions that were driving the reporting with this segment.
Although all those things came through in these articles, and I want to encourage our listeners right now to please join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Bring us your ideas about the curfew, your experiences with it, your family, your neighborhood's experiences with it. Listen to the stories of these 3 young journalists and wrestle with what they're telling us about what this may mean for the future and what the reality is. 410-319-8888, or you can write to us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. But please join us, 410-319-8888, to join in on this conversation. So let me just take pieces of this and kind of walk through this from the time we have together the next 15 minutes to kind of think about how to pull these pieces together, because I was thinking about the graphics and all the stats that you put together, Asha, with Asha, right?
Asha,
excuse me, I'm sorry.
It's fine.
Asha. And Tayshia and and Amiro, the things that you put together in terms of the stories. And so let me go back to them here. One of the things about the centers that struck me was the fact you wrote about that most of the kids at the centers were not kids who were picked up.
No.
This is fascinating. So talk a bit about that. Well, what did you discover at the centers?
So actually the kids who were at the East Side Center, who had the most kids at the center.
That was the better organized of the 2
exactly,
centers, you were
right.
saying, right?
Those kids were actually dropped off by a relative. The majority of the kids were dropped off by a grandmother. They called her Grandma G, or an uncle, or somebody other, but not a police officer. They were not curfew stops. They were voluntarily dropped off at 9 o'clock. They're voluntarily picked up at 11:30. So it wasn't like, you know, these kids are out on the streets. It's more so, I don't want to say it, and it's not my words. Technically, it's a babysitting service on the weekends. Let me just jump in because
one of the things people don't realize is the curfew centers where kids are supposed to go to are only open
on Friday and Saturday.
Right.
So what happens Monday through Thursday? So
what does happen Monday through Thursday?
They take them back home. They escort them back home. And if they don't, you know, if no one's home, then that's when they go to Department of Social Services, which throws them into a different ballpark of, you know, being in the system, apparently, and then the parents get involved into a deeper level of investigation and things like that. So the curfew centers, they are meant to, you know, spot kids who are in need of, you know, some families counseling or some type of service like that. But the majority of the kids at the curfew center were from family members, drop-offs, walk-ins, things like that, but not from a police officer.
And that to me was, I mean, that it struck me. I'm just curious what you all think about this, and I'm going to come to the numbers next and then go to the PIT, because I found the PIT fascinating, too, really fascinating, was that when you looked at the numbers, that you had this map of the city, but it showed distinctly who was being picked up, who was not being picked up.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, one of the things that we found most interesting, too, was that even in these neighborhoods that were white neighborhoods, black kids were the only kids that were being picked up.
Hmm.
And when we talked to Councilman Brandon Scott, one of the things he was saying was that, you know, maybe those aren't high crime areas. But even still, why would the only kids who were picked up be black?
Can you remember what neighborhoods you're talking about?
I don't actually know Baltimore in general.
I think it was Roland Park area, Mount Washington, areas that we think of as kind of predominant. Well, not that we think of, that are predominantly white.
And I have there's a woman who's been on the show many times who runs a program for young people at Dunbar, does really great work, and she lives in Roland Park. I remember she said this to me one day, that she often has kids living with her when they have no place to go. So they stay in her home and they live in Roland Park. And her biggest fear is that between getting off the bus and getting to her house, they're going to be stopped, harassed, and picked up because they are black walking in Roland Park. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're
and
to.
And that's what the maps generally show, because even in just in the harbor, the harbor is a place where most kids hang out. A lot of children hang out. But the only stops that I saw were black kids being stopped. Occasionally, a person of Hispanic descent would be picked up, but it was mostly black kids. I think we had recorded maybe about 2 white kids out of almost 200 pickups, and that was until October. So,
okay, so question about that. This might be an absurd question, but let me ask you anyway. So, from your looking at this, does that mean because there are fewer white kids who are on the streets at night? Or does that mean because they're selecting, that they're targeting black kids? Could you figure that out while you were doing this?
Well,
I mean, I don't necessarily believe that there are fewer white kids out. Because, I mean, just thinking about the nature of teenagers in general, we're going to hang out. Even
I was one of those.
Yeah, I mean, I knew a lot of people of different descents who hung out,
right.
Different ethnicities who hung out with me at night. And it wasn't because we were bad. It was just because we were teenagers and wanted to do something. And even, like, when I first started reporting, I went to Harbor East Movie Theater. And there were 2 kids. I think one was 15 and one was 14, and they were at the movie, and it was after 9 o'clock. They weren't planning on heading home immediately, and I'm sure they didn't get picked up. They said that they had never been picked up. They had never been stopped.
These were white kids.
Yeah, these were white kids. I'm sorry. Yeah, they were never picked up. They had never had any real interaction with the curfew. I'm not sure that they really knew that there was a curfew in place. So it kind of goes to show that only certain kids, because another group of my peers went down to the harbor, and the black kids said that they had seen the police all the time, that they knew it was a curfew and that they had been stopped a couple of times. So it just goes to show that maybe it is about your race?
Joey is actually Spanish.
Let me let you hold on for 1 second. We're going to come right back to you. We're going to take a very brief break and come right back to continue this conversation. And we're hearing Ebony and Ivory by Sir Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder, which started a 7-week run at number one on this day in 1982. It was later named as the 10th worst song of all time by Blender Magazine, and in 2007 was named the worst duet in history by BBC 6 Music Listeners. Oh Lord, why don't we? Welcome back. You listen to your source for Cool Jazz and More, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And this is Mark Steiner, and that's All the Young Dudes by Martha Hoople. Overend Watts of Martha Hoople was born on this day in 1947. Today we're listening back to a conversation we had earlier this year when Morgan State University students put together an investigative cover story for the Baltimore City paper looking at the youth curfew that was expanded in 2014. In light of the curfew that the city was under during the uprising, we're listening back to this conversation about the youth in the city who are under the curfew every night of the year. We have with us the editor of the student newspaper here, Morgan, Asha Glover. Asha Glover's in the studio.
Hi.
And we have Amira Hairston, who's in the studio with us.
Hello.
And Tayshia Poteet.
Hi.
And, of course, their professor, Karen Hubert.
Thank
you. And you at 410-319-8888. And, Tayshia, you were going to say what before I go to the phones?
We were talking about, you know, the majority of the kids being picked up being African-American. But I interviewed Joey and his friends, and they were very diverse. Joey was Spanish. Charlie, who was his friend, the recorder, he was white. And Travis, he was African-American. So, and all three of them said they had, you know, issues where they've been stopped by a cop, but they've never been taken to a curfew center or anything like that. They've usually just say, okay, time to pack it up, going in the house and things like that. A few times it reached a harassment level, but generally they all end the same, them going back home, you know, clearing out the space or whatever like that. But, you know, it's diverse from just the trio, you know.
The skateboarding world is a diverse world is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, those three were, you know. But they all spoke the same, so.
Right.
Close your eyes. I don't know who I'm talking to.
That's interesting. That's another story. So when I was looking at the pit, and then Donna, we're going to come to your call, 410-319-8888. That really resonated with me, too, because the pit kind of spoke to young people wanting to be out, not being bothered, and having their own space to be in.
Mm-hmm.
That was really – and painting that picture of an inner city where the yards are too small for young people to hang out in, wanted to be outside, and they created this world for themselves,
yep.
A little safe zone.
Mm-hmm. They the pit and the yard also – the pit was just in the back of an abandoned house, actually. So it was just like this little tiny, tiny area that they would just gather in and just, I don't know, do what boys do. I don't know what boys do. But they would just, you know.
Don't always want to know either.
And I think it was just their little sanctuary, you know. They weren't out in the open, so they weren't doing anything, you know, to draw more attention to themselves. But they were also like, you know. They were private. They had their little bit of privacy, you know. They wanted to be boys. They wanted to just chill. They didn't want to have to worry about, you know, mom, dad, you know, my little sister, my little brother. It was just them. So it's like their own little world, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So the same could be said about the yard as well, which was, it was pretty much just in the back of one of their family members' yard. And it was just like a picnic table. And
the gazebo, that's where that mm-hmm. was, right?
And the chairs and everything, which was their supposed hangout spot in the morning. Like, they would all meet to go to school in the morning together, those who did go to the same school, because they were all, like, diverse. They were high school students, and then there was, you know, college students as well.
Really?
But I talked to the sophomore, the high school student. So it was just, they seemed fine. Like, I didn't understand, like, they weren't, you know, they heard about the curfew, obviously, but they just weren't worried about it because they were never in an area where they would be picked up.
What do you mean they were never in an area where they would be picked up?
They were in, you know, backyards and, you know, their own little, like, hangout spots. They weren't, like, in the public. Like, they weren't at, like, a store or something, just hanging out in the middle of in front of the store or anything, so.
Although, arguably, they had to get from that yard to their houses, et cetera, when they mm-hmm. left. One of the things I think is interesting, too, about the curfew and the teenagers and this is true as the mother of a teenager, but Baltimore is a pretty outside culture, too. People hang out on their porches,
right.
and kids play on the sidewalks and the streets and whatever, you know, all spring, summer, fall long. In some cultures, that's honored and glorified because then they're like, oh, the old people are sitting out on their porches and they're keeping an eye on things. So it's interesting to have this big push to make sure kids are inside and to bring the police into the enforcement aspect of that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other piece with the enforcement aspect I want to come to that has to do with who gets picked up and how that happens and how effective you think all of this really is from your investigations. But let me go to the phone switch first. 410-319-8888. Your questions and thoughts for these three students and their professor here at Morgan State University who wrote the lead article in the City Paper, a great investigative piece about our curfews, laws in Maryland, how they've been implemented, what they've meant. I've not seen this kind of investigative work on this particular issue yet, and they are the ones who did it. Seniors here at Morgan State University is 410-319-8888. Donna, you're on the air.
How you doing, Mark?
Good morning, Donna.
Happy New Year to you.
Same to you.
And your guests also. As a graduate of Morgan in urban planning, one of the things that I found when it comes to the curfew, the curfew issue is more of an issue of parents and children. When parents don't have, especially when it's a socioeconomic issue, when parents are not there, you know, if they're a single mother, like in my neighborhood, I wish these young ladies would come in my neighborhood because the children were running all over the place. The curfew was in existence, but they were running in the streets. They were not supervised. They were, you know, as young as 3 years old, running up and down past 9 o'clock, and the mothers knew about it. The single mothers knew about it, the ones who were in the apartments, but they didn't care. And it became to a point where it became a safety issue. And, you know, a lot of us had to call the police constantly and, you know, get in contact with the mayor's youth commission because these children were so young. And the mothers, no parent outside watching them, they all outside 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. So in respect, I do support the curfew in a way, but I think we have to get to the heart of the issue of parental parenting, parental neglect, abandonment, when parents, especially single mothers who are overwhelmed, don't have the energy to let these children stay in the house, so they let them run around and run off. And they don't see anything wrong with that. So I wish these ladies were in my neighborhood because they could have gotten a lot of information from these young kids. Why are you out here? Mm-hmm. And to sum everything up, it's a socioeconomic factor because most of the kids who were outside were males. You all saw any of the females outside. They were all males. The youngest I saw was 3. The oldest is maybe about 13 or 14. They have nothing to do.
Okay.
And until we come up with something for these young people to do at nighttime or in the summertime, we're going to continue to have these issues. And I'll have to listen to your guests. Thank you.
Thanks, Donna. So I'm curious how you respond to her from your investigations. What are your thoughts on this?
Okay, so basically the objective of extending the curfew law and having these curfew centers were to prevent the, you know, youth from violent crimes and things like that. It wasn't meant to reduce crimes, but protect the kids, you know, get them the services they need and things like that. Like I said, the curfew center is operated only on Friday and Saturday. So, I mean, it's not the end-all, you know, be-all, as Brandon Scott said, to, you know, get these single mothers the services they need or things like that. They'll point them in the direction towards that. But, you know, we were having a discussion whether there should be more rec centers open and things like that for kids to do, you know, at nighttime and things like that. But really, who would, you know, want their kids at a rec center that night? You know, rec centers are, you know, daytime activities and things like that. But for the single mothers and having the kids out, you know, many people were saying that it shouldn't be the responsibility of the police, you know, to, you know, kind of gather up these kids.
Who was saying this? The mothers were saying this?
Well, some people in the community, you know, they don't want to criminalize the kids, basically. So having these kids interact so young,
right.
and, you know, maybe teenagers who kind of have some bravado factors sometimes,
right.
to, you know, bash with police, it causes problems. And basically, I also had an interview with a Washington Post magazine writer. Her name was Lisa Letnisser. She was, kind of making the connection of a Ferguson. And nobody wants their child to be the next, Michael Brown. So do you really want these police, stopping kids? Anything can happen under the title of a curfew stop. So that's another factor of do you really want the police, hammering down on the kids in the neighborhood and all you're seeking is a service? Find them a service,
And one of the things that was interesting, the boys that Amira interviewed, she asked them what they would do when the police did stop them or if the police stopped them, and they were unanimous in saying they would run.
They would run.
Yeah, and I remember that's article. Yeah.
A scary thought here,
The police, they're not supposed to, you're not supposed to, manhandle them or whatever. It's supposed to be, a friendly interaction. But when I asked them, I was like, do you think that could ever happen? Do you think, a cop can come up to you and tell you, nicely, come on, I'm going to take you to a curfew center. You're out after curfew. Do you honestly think that a child or not a child, but a teen would willingly go with that cop? And they were like, no, that'll never happen. It won't be no peaceful. It won't be peaceful. So,
How did you? I mean, numbers cruncher. What do you?
I think that what Tasia was saying, was really what I was thinking. How Councilman Brandon Scott, was saying how it's not the end all to be all, but that services need to be provided for youth to do after hours. Like, you can send them to a recreation center, and there are church events that they can go to. And if they're working, they can be out. But what other activities are there for a 16-year-old? Because a 16-year-old isn't going to want to go to a rec center at 11 o'clock. I'm sure that there are other things to do, unless there's some type of party or some other entertaining activity. But a 16-year-old isn't going to want to just go to a rec center voluntarily at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night.
So it raises so many questions. Listeners, please jump in here, 410-319-8888. Get right to your calls, 410-319-8888. But I thought about a couple of things. One was when I read the piece on the rec centers that you did,
yes.
Tasha, right?
Mm-hmm.
What hit me was, wait a minute, maybe this is what the city needs to do. Maybe we do need to have places open late at night that are with people running those centers who know how to work with kids, for parents who work, for have to get them out of the house, for places they need to go. That's the first that struck me, because it sounded like the places were really, at least on the east side, mm-hmm. was really managed well.
The Youth Connect that I spoke to on the west side, she, although there was no kids there at the time that I visited, she did speak to me about one of the kids that she counseled and found the issue in their home with the boys being bullied by his half-brothers and things like that.
Right, right.
So, it's not like the kids are just there to hang out.
She got the family into counseling.
So they got the service that they needed. Why? Because she spoke to the boy, found the issue, contacted the parents and things like that. So the kids, when they go to the center, they are being counseled. They are being talked to, hey, what's, breaking down the walls for some of the kids that are tight-lipped and don't want to talk, put the walls up and things like that. So, the curfew centers are helping in areas counseling the kids and finding a problem. But the one issue that I found was it's only a small group of community kids. It's not reaching, a broad spectrum. It's just that same group that comes in every weekend, the same group of community kids and cousins and relatives. They all know each other. They're all friends. So, how can you really, distribute those services or find the services if you're only seeing the same repeated kids at the center?
So, but what you're saying is these are kids who, if for some reason, they and their families want to use the center.
They want to, least the kids, they have no problem being there.
Right.
All the kids I talked to at the center, they loved it. They were all, playing, eating, roughhousing with each other, just as kids do, just on the inside.
So, and I was thinking about the other pieces that you did before I come back to the numbers, because I think numbers are critical to this about what they're saying about how this is being enforced and not enforced around the city, is that the piece about the young skateboarders and the piece about the pit and the yard mm-hmm. that you did, Amira, it spoke very clearly about what young people want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people can raise questions about, well, wait a minute, should a 16-year-old during a school night be out past 9 o'clock on the street? And that's a legitimate question for anybody to ask, and families should be asking as well, right? But it also speaks to what the kids themselves want, who are not involved in illegal activities or doing things that are that could get them arrested because they committed a crime, but are just out in the street because they're hanging.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they. When we talked to them, we actually asked them if there was a rec center or something, because they were saying that there wasn't a rec center around them at all. And we asked them if there was one, but would you go? And they were like, yeah, like, why not? Like, I could play basketball all night. Like, I love basketball. Why not? You know, I could play a sport, or, you know, I can hang out with my boys, or we could play cards or whatever. So they were into it. They were willing to. They said that they would be willing to go, but it's just the fact that there was nothing, like she said, there's nothing for them to do. So they make their own entertainment. They know what's right and what's wrong. They know that, you know, being out late at night at 2 or 3 in the morning, there's nothing for you to do that late at night. They know that. But I think it was just them trying to, I guess, like I said, create entertainment for themselves. Like, you don't want to be in the house all day. You don't want to be in the house, you know, at 8 o'clock, even though it's a reasonable time, but for, you know, a teen, like, 8 o'clock is like, yeah, 5 or 2. It's like, heck no, I don't want to be in a house that early. So, you know, they kind of find their own ways to create entertainment. And sometimes, like the woman who, you know, called in, sometimes that form of entertainment is not, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, condone it, or they don't want.
So let me ask you an editorial question. Right? So I'm just curious. If you think about all the collective research that you did, mm-hmm, and the work you did.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take it to the level of memory. So if you're writing an editorial about this, not just reporting on what you saw, what would you begin to talk about with each other? Ashley, let me start, since you are the editor, of how you would approach this editorially.
I think that the first question that I would raise is the one that Professor Hooper mentioned. If kids who are 3, 4, 5, and 6 years old and they're outside at 11 o'clock, the police should be able to take them in regardless of there being a curfew or not, because it's a 3-year-old at 11 o'clock where your parents. There needs to be that should happen regardless. That would be the first thing that I would mention, because otherwise a curfew isn't really that necessary. If you're a 16-year-old or a 15-year-old and you're outside doing a crime, then you should be picked up regardless. But for what other reason than for hanging out with your friends, why should you be picked up? I mean, and I have 2 younger brothers. One's 21, so he's kind of out of the window. But the other one is 14. And I've seen him walk, like during the summer, I've seen him walk out of our house at night with his friends and go around the corner to another friend's house. And my mother knows where he's at. And she trusts him to get around the corner. So, I mean, what's really the issue? I mean, these are boys. And, yes, my brother sometimes is rowdy. He rides his skateboard in the middle of the street. I'm sure that the people in our neighborhood are like, this kid won't get out the middle of the street. But he's also respectful. And if someone asks him to get out the street, he gets out the street. Now, I understand all kids aren't like that. There are always exceptions. But does that warrant a need for the police to parent children? And just because you don't see someone parenting the way that you want them to parent doesn't mean that they're not parenting, doesn't mean that they're not a good parent, and it doesn't warrant the police coming in and doing that job.
That's so how would you, in this editorial meeting, what would you two provide for this, what you think should be out there?
Just to, like, piggyback Amira off of what I said, I just think that it should be, what do the kids want? Like, what would get them, you know, off the streets? Like, what activities would they be willing to do? I think that is a big part of it, and I think that should definitely be addressed, and it's not. So, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we live in a different age. A lot of, I mean, we talk to not only kids, but we talk to adults also, some older folk, And, you know, they give us the same response. Well, back in my day, we were in the house when the streetlights came on.
That's what we all said.
But, but we're not back in that day. Right. We're right. Not back in that day. So kids have so much to do now. Social media, you know, everything is just so different for them. And, you know, having a rec center, okay, that's cool. That's fine. But what's in the rec center that's going to get the kids that want to actually do that? You know, kids don't want to do the same boring, I'll play checkers with you and things like that. No, they want to be interactive and, you know, social. And social butterflies are what kids are these days. So what if the streetlights are on? They're not going to be in the house. It's just not that day anymore. You know, we're in a new age where kids like to be out. They like to be active. They like to do things, socialize and things like that. So the question will be to like Amira said, find out what the kids want. Of course, it's a big issue for the parents because it's, you know, it's leaning on them with some legal, you know, sometimes they'll get civil citations and things like that if they don't abide by the curfew. But, I mean, what we were aiming to do with our project is, you know, get the kids' voice, who are the main ones mm-hmm. being directly mm-hmm. affected, because when you at a curfew stop, the cop isn't talking to the parent first. Of course, their first interaction is with the kid.
Right.
So the main thing is get the kid's voice out. Yeah. You got to hear what they say. You can't, like, tune them out.
Another issue that came up in the course of the students reporting on this topic that I thought was interesting and important that might come up in an editorial was, aside from the disproportionate pickups of black young people versus white, was the issue of how many young people are stopped by the police and frisked, mm-hmm. and what happens if they find weed on these kids? Because mm-hmm. we know that a lot of the kids, the young people, are smoking weed, and this kind of ups the chances of them being swept into the legal system for possession or something like that. So that's worrisome, too. And that data was something that we could not get from the city, which is, I think, a very useful bit of information.
So nobody – what was their response?
We had some trouble getting data in general.
Just cracking up over here.
It was mess. It was complete and total mess because
– Who'd you go to? Who wouldn't give it to you?
Well, first we had the data. It was there. It was on an open Baltimore website where you could get all these police records. And then it wasn't. They took the whole thing down.
In the middle of your investigation?
Yes. And I don't know if that has anything to do with us or it has something to do with – I don't know. But
so what would that have data set told you?
That would have told us exactly how – we could have gotten the – raw data of how many kids were stopped, where they were stopped.
Not just arrested and taken home, but stopped.
Yes.
All of it, right.
We would have, because they would have been recorded as curfew stops.
Right.
So we would have, and then, I mean, we have the map from the ACLU, but we would have been able to see that data for ourselves. And as it changed, we would have been able to get those changes. So we kind of had to halt all of our data collection at October 6th because there was no more – the data wasn't getting updated because they took the chart down. And then we went to one of the people at the mayor's office, the person who created the press release on – or the person who was the contact person on the press release that had the mayor's recent data and on the curfew, and she never replied. First, she said she was on vacation. Then we called her again, sent her an email. She said, I'll get back to you. Never heard from her ever again. She just ignored all forms of communication. So it was like, just tell us. Like, it's easier to tell us than for us to say, you know, you guys don't want to cooperate. I mean, I have another person who was working on the project. She called the mayor's office a bunch of times on a different conversation. They kept giving her the runaround. They just kept connecting her. Oh, you need to talk to this person. And that person would say, oh, you need to talk to this person. And eventually she did start threatening them, like, we're going to say that you guys did not help us. And she got one person to talk to her off of that. But she had to get dirty a little bit.
And one of the things that they never really made clear either was if they did these, if the police, like, how did the police actually record the data? That was something the ACLU attorney we spoke with, Sonia Kumar, also was curious about because she was one of the people that came in and that my students interviewed. But one of the things that she pointed out that wasn't clear is if they stop a young person and for ostensibly a curfew stop, but it turns into a pat down and they discover the person has weed on them or something like that, and then it becomes something where the kid's taken to baby booking, et cetera, then is that first stop recorded as a curfew violation? Maybe not.
Right.
So we don't have a sense then of how many kids might be swept into the system through
because
these curfew stops. And another thing that was interesting with the whole idea of the curfew is a lot of the students were very nervous about going out to report themselves because they're young. They're all 18, 19, 20, 21. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell by looking at anybody. So, and I was asking them to go out and, you know, spend a night from, you know, 9 until 1 in the morning with these young people on the streets. And they were very nervous themselves about whether they would be stopped by the police or harassed by the police for curfew violations.
I know. I mean, you can be any age. My 17-year-old can sometimes look like she's 16 or 17, sometimes she looks like she's 23. It depends on right? You just don't know. But I was also, one of the things, in the little time we have left, I think to throw out as well, what you said earlier, Tayshia, about if kids are picked up during the week, they can be taken to social services, right?
If they're picked up Monday through Thursday, where there is no curfew center hours, that they're most likely escorted home. If there's no one home, then they go to social services.
Which opens another bag.
Exactly. Then they're in the system. You got to get processed when you go to social services.
Right. So, I mean, there are a lot of issues that you raised here. I'm curious what you – we have like six or eight minutes left in the conversation. So I'm curious what you learned from this. What's your takeaway as young journalists from all of this? Go ahead.
I learned that there's still tension between the, you know, police and the community. You know, there's never going to be, you know, handshake. We're all kumbaya here. There's always going to be an issue. And then this issue just brings the kids into it. And when you bring the kids into the issue, everybody gets touchy. Parents don't want you to touch their kids or talk to their kids or do anything, especially if you're wearing a uniform. And especially with things happening in the news to young kids, you know, getting hurt, getting shot, getting killed. And then police get off, no punishment, and things like that. So that brings in the whole other perspective of, is my kid safe even during a curfew stop? So, people are opposed to the curfew, but they're abiding by the curfew because they don't want, any repercussions to it. So just to avoid anything, okay, we're going to abide by it. I'm not totally comfortable with it, but I'm going to do it just because, you know, it's the law. So even though they're uncomfortable with it, kind of give or take, they're still abiding by it. So
that's interesting. What are your takeaways from those, Amira?
In terms of the reporting side, like Asha said, I also did a piece on Washington D.C.'s curfew and compared it to the Baltimore City curfew. So it was very hard to get someone like a cop or, you know, a politician or someone to talk to me because they just didn't want to say anything to me. Like, I felt like they were, like, dodging me. They were giving me the runaround, as she said. And it kind of threw me because I thought that they would want to talk to me. They would want to say, like, get what they wanted to say out or, you know, show their support for the curfew or, you know, tell me what they thought about it. But it was actually the opposite. Like, people were actually avoiding me. Like, emails, phone calls were getting, like, ignored or, you know, they would tell me, oh, you know, I'll call you back later. Mm-hmm. And then I wouldn't hear from them, like, and then I would call them back, and then I would get their voicemail. So it was like, okay, you're dodging me right now. But I guess in terms of that, I feel like I really wouldn't, you know, I think I would probably be a lot more persistent, maybe like do some like random drop bys or something, because I feel like when they're in their face, they can't, you know, push you to the side. It's easy, so. Yeah, I think in terms of that.
We have literally a couple of minutes left. Asha.
I think it would be the same. You have to drop by these people in office because they all got each other's backs. So you have to find a way into that loop. You have to get yourself into that. And we had a lot of time to do reporting, but at the beginning we didn't necessarily know what we knew what we were reporting, but we didn't know what angles we were going to do. And we didn't think that it was going to be as difficult. So that was a great learning experience that you think that, I mean, when you're reporting on campus, it can be a little bit hard, but you send an email, you can just show up to somebody's office. when you're doing these things, you have to put a little bit more planning and you have to put a little bit more time into it. So you have to work these people into giving you what you want. You have to build these relationships. And I don't think walking in, I knew it, but I didn't know it.
So this was a good learning experience here. Yeah, actually a powerful and also good work. Yeah. We have about a minute left. Professor Hubert.
Well, I just think, as the students have pointed out, they got some great real-world journalism lessons.
And put it in a real newspaper.
And we put it in a real newspaper.
I mean, a citywide newspaper is what I mean.
And they, you know, it was a multimedia package, and I think that was interesting for some of the students who hadn't worked in video, et cetera. So they learned a lot, I think, about that. And even the fact-checking process, I think they learned a lot by the professional process. So
this is great. I mean, maybe one day we'll have you back and talk a bit about journalism and your thoughts about journalism here and where you think this might take it, where you think the future may be taking us. Mm-hmm. Since I take you want to stay in journalism?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm in between two careers. Like, I do music and I do the journalism thing. So I'm incorporating the two.
That's not a bad idea.
Well, I just love to write, so.
Me too.
It's been a great. You guys are great, and this reporting was just fantastic and amazing. Ashley Glover, who's also the editor in chief of the spokesman here at Morgan State University, Amira Harrison and Tayshia Poteet, who wrote this and did this incredible work in the Baltimore City paper with their professor Karen Hubert. And it's still online. The City Paper will be linking to it at steinershow.org. And if you haven't picked up the City Paper this week, you can still get this issue now until tomorrow when the new issue hits the stands. And it's well worth the read and going to the website of the City Paper and seeing the in-depth stuff they did in multimedia as well. So congratulations on your work. You are amazing.
Thank you.
Good to have you all here. Thanks.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavromis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. And on our way out of here, it's Ring of Fire by the great Johnny Cash, which he co-wrote with June Carter Cash, who passed away on this day in 2003. To hear this show again, podcast past shows, and find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And you can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.